Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a very special guest. Her name is Stacy L. Pearsall. She created the Veterans Portrait Project. Some are smiling, others gaze at a distant point, but all are veterans. The Veterans Portrait Project began while Stacy Pearsall recovered from combat injuries sustained in Iraq. Spending hours in the VA waiting rooms surrounded by veterans from every generation and branch of service, Stacy was compelled to honor and thank them in the only way that she knows how, photography. The Veterans Portrait Project totals 3,000 veterans and grows daily. Stacy is an award-winning American photographer. She first entered combat as a photographer in Iraq in 2003. She spent 280 days covering humanitarian relief missions and covering special forces operations. Her images were used by the President, Secretary of Defense, and Joint Chiefs of Staff to make informed decisions in the battle space. Stacy served as a military photographer in the United States Air Force until her wounds led to her medical discharge. Since her retirement, Stacy has worked as a professional photographer. You can find out more information by visiting her website, which is veteransportraitproject.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Stacy to the show. Good day, Stacy. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. I really love the work that you're doing with the Veterans Portrait Project. The photographs, each one tells such an amazing story.
Thank you.
Well, I usually like to have my guests start off by giving a little bit a background about themselves, and if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners a little bit more than what I did in the introduction about your military experience and photography and how that all came together for you to become a combat photographer.
Yeah, well, I joined the service at 17 and with the intention of being a photographer, and they sent me to the school where they send all military photographers, and upon graduating that school, I was sent into intelligence. So I really didn't touch a camera for about 4 years. And as an artistic person and someone who needed a creative outlet, I was kind of miserable in intelligence and was dying to find something new. And I heard about combat camera and thought it was absolutely an amazing opportunity. So I put some work together and threw caution to the wind and was accepted in July of, let's see, it was 9/11, right before 9/11, actually. And then by the time I actually reported into my new unit as combat camera, most of the people were deployed to Afghanistan, so it was jumping headlong into a unit already active in photographing conflict and trying to find my way of it. So I actually stayed with that unit from January of 2002 until my medical retirement, about 8 years later. So.
Wow.
It was a good run.
I find it amazing that you went into the service specifically with photography. I mean, I would never have put that as a direct desire, the photography in military to me. I mean, I understand that, there are, photographers and we've seen many of the photos, but to me, I'm kind of shocked that there's a program, so to speak, you know, one that you can kind of go through and learn and use that as a specialty?
Well, you know, actually, the military found a great use for photographers quite early on. Of course, some of us know from watching the History Channel, we see pictures from the Civil War. And of course, as photography became more user-friendly, it became more useful to the military. And so you'll see a little bit more during World War One, and most prolifically during World War Two. So they actually took a lot of videographers and photographers from Hollywood and drafted them into the service and used their talents in the military to help document the war effort. So there were a lot of different uses for photographers, and as somebody who I personally love art, and that's what I wanted to do before I joined the service, and the fact that they had a wonderful art program, and particularly photography, it was definitely something I wanted to get locked into.
Yeah. Now, when you're, you know, in the field taking photographs, is there, you know, is there like a purpose? Is there like, or multiple purposes? Like, for example, you know, to, you know, document, you know, movements or strategy or people. Well, I mean, what guides, you know, the subject of your photographs?
Well, my job as a combat photojournalist was to document the war as any other newspaper or magazine journalist would. So essentially, I would go out and on a day-to-day basis find out where the story was going to be taking place, or where a story might very well be, and go photograph it from a newsworthy aspect. So essentially, that was my primary goal, to go where other journalists may not be able to or not capable of getting to.
Okay.
There were obviously other purposes or other means of use for my imagery. So the battle space commanders might use it to kind of see what it looks like out there. The Joint Chiefs of Staff, that same use. And my pictures have been seen by the Secretary of Defense and the President, and have been used in numerous ways, not only by internally military, but also by CNN and, New York Times, other publishers.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to have your work, you know, as an artist and photographer, to be able to have your work serve such a great purpose, you know. And now, when you obviously went out to, you know, gather where the stories are at, were you also taking pictures of, you know, the unit that you were with in off times? I mean, you know, were there like non-mission specific, you know, like photographs, you know, to kind of document morale or camaraderie or that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, my goal was always to share the story of the service member all 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Okay.
And so when the mission stopped, it didn't mean I stopped shooting. And so a lot of my photographs really focused on the humanity of war. And that also looks into, I guess, the mortality of our soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So also the relationships, the interpersonal relationships that they gain during times of war, and when people find themselves in austere conditions, their relationships are much more accelerated, in that they either befriend each other more quickly, or they go quite the opposite more quickly as well. So I definitely try to explore that as well.
Yeah, I would think that it would have been hard to turn off take off the photographer hat, you know, when you were out there. It would just be, I mean, it would be, to me, it would seem that there would be a constant source of sensory input that you could be able to take in and photograph.
Yeah, but sheer fatigue will definitely make you just take a mental image of it versus
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you know, as I mentioned in the introduction, the idea for the Veterans Portrait Project came to you when you were, you know, in when you were recovering from your injury. So, would you mind kind of sharing with the listeners, kind of take us back to that point in time and explain how that all came to be, what your vision is that you saw?
Yeah, well, it actually started, I mean, there was a pivot point, like, when I began the Veterans Portrait Project, but what I found was there were a couple of things that really inspired me, and it goes back to my time on the battlefield when I would go out on operations with guys, and ultimately, you know, it's war, so sometimes people are lost, and what I found was early on my last deployment, I have a lot of friends that were killed early on. And when the families and the friends asked if I had any pictures of them, I felt devastated. A few of them I did, and a few of them I did not. And I felt devastated for not being able to produce that. And then I started to make this habit of taking portraits of the soldiers before we went out on patrol or went out on a mission. And it didn't even have to be anything really nice or lovely. It was just a snapshot saying, okay, I have got this bag. If for whatever reason something happens, then I have it, and I feel secure in that. And I started calling that the last living picture. And that kind of carried through with me, and it made a big impact on me, both mentally and spiritually in many ways. And when I got wounded on my last deployment, I was really having a hard time getting my mental health and my physical health succinct. And I was feeling really bitter, and recovery was delayed because I was kind of, I guess, emotionally deflated. And, you know, the military said, hey, we don't need you anymore. And I had lost my sense of purpose. And I think that you need that in order to continue to want to move forward, put one foot in front of the other. And so I was in this really dark place. And I was waiting to see my neurologist, and I was at the VA hospital surrounded by men 3 and 4 times my age and feeling really on display. I was 20, at the time I was 28 years old, and so relatively young female. And I always felt like I was fighting for the care and kind of having to justify to everybody that I was a veteran, that I was a combat veteran, that I was a combat wounded veteran. And that, too, with my fellow veterans. So here I was feeling just all around not a nice person to be around and being very frustrated and bitter. And I was sitting there waiting for my doctor's appointment. There's this old man staring at me, and I could see him in my peripheral vision, and I could just feel my blood pressure just skyrocketing and thinking, would you just stop staring at me? I'm not a piece of meat. And then, you know, you get this moment where this devil and this angel's on your shoulder, and you think, okay, I'm going to tell this guy off, and that'll feel really good, and I'll just vent some steam. And then the angel on my shoulder, who tends to be the more level-headed person, says, just ask him what he wants. And so I did. And it was just, he was just waiting for an invitation to chat. That's all he wanted. And his face lit up, and he was like, oh, and that was like, it was like a floodgate. He was like telling me about, you know, wanting to enlist, but he was missing a digit on his hand. And I said, no, you can't enlist. And he was like, but I still have my trigger finger. That's all that counts. Anyway, he went on and he told me like how he finally did get in the army. He was there at D-Day and went all the way into Poland where he liberated a concentration camp. It was incredible. And then I thought, oh my goodness, I almost made the catastrophic mistake of telling a war hero but then I realized, you know, this, I was sitting there and feeling angry because I was prejudiced. I was thinking other people were prejudiced against me, and really it was me. I was the negative one. I was the one, I was just projecting this, you know, and I thought, I need to honor these people because I felt like I wasn't being honored or recognized. And I can't imagine I mean, I imagine they feel the same way. So then I thought, well, I should take this guy's portrait and really, you know, say thank you for just being him. And
mm-hmm.
I did. And then I ended up taking like 300 later that year and then, you know, 500 the next year and so on. And it's been going on ever since. So the Veterans Portrait Project was born out of that.
Wow. You know, the idea of just, you know, opening up to hear the story, I would tend to think that many veterans welcome the opportunity to tell their story. But they, you know, it's for some, like now you mentioned on your video on your website, there's a video under the interview section that you mentioned about how, you know, particularly with the Vietnam era and the Iraqi veterans, you know, there wasn't this big old welcome home kind of thing. So that the ability to tell your story and what you experienced and you know, and really communicate the value of the service really isn't there. And a lot of times I think probably veterans will hold back from telling the story, but let the floodgates open if asked.
Right. Yeah. And some are reluctant because, you know, there are stories that these veterans have that may not be palatable for folks who have not lived it. And I think that they feel they should keep it to themselves in order to spare sort of non-military types the agony of that kind of information. And, you know, I think that it's corrosive in many ways. And the more it sits inside you, the more it erodes and the more it'll eat away. And I feel that it's so therapeutic and so cleansing to just purge to just get it out there in the atmosphere, and then once it's out there, then it doesn't go away. Let me make that effort
right
here, but it does help release some of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, such a dramatic point in one's life, you know, to have that experience, and you know, and it shapes you one way or the other. I mean, it really kind of creates the person who you are. So not to be able to share that, I'm sure, you know, would be frustrating. And now, when you take the photos of the veterans, do you find that just that particular setting, you know, in that setting, that you will, you know, they'll kind of basically tell you all of their stories. Not all of their stories, you know, but they'll kind of, you know, tell who they are and what their experience is. It's kind of like an opening for them to be able to share.
Well, I think what happens is I sit down and get to chatting with them and maybe not dive right into it, but I believe that, you know, just asking the right questions, and I've done it enough now where, you know, it's just being observant and finding the information and where to ask a little bit more and to dig a little deeper. And I believe that they feel that they can open up and be a little bit more vulnerable because I have been there. I've lived it. I've been wounded. I've been, you know, I've recovered. And so I'm not somebody who it would fall on deaf ears or maybe be open to misinterpretation. I know exactly what they're saying, and I know exactly what they mean. Even if they can't find the words, I can always help guide them through it. So I believe that my history has been beneficial and has also been, in many ways, the preamble to what I'm doing now. Had I not been through all of those horrendous things and had I not survived what I did, I wouldn't be able to be as successful in this part of my life.
Yeah, well, there's a natural empathy, you know, that you're able to, you know, show them, and you know, so many times, you know, our communication is not verbal. You know, there's that whole nonverbal communication, and I'm sure, you know, quite a bit of that goes on, you know, during the discussion. Now, how have you gone about and gotten the veterans to photograph?
Okay. Well, usually what happens is I will pick a location, pick a date, and then I will either use social media or I will have my host, whomever that may be, help get the word out with their Rolodex of veterans, for instance. And what happens, and it's so amazing, it never fails, you know, I will go to Hinesville, Georgia, and I will set up my little studio, and word of mouth is an absolutely amazing thing. You know, John will show up, and John will say, oh, I better bring Jim and Bill because, you know, they're my Vietnam vet friends, and we're a coffee circle. And then Bill will be like, oh, well, my grandpa, you know, he's a World War II vet. I need to bring him in. So he puts me, and so it goes like that, and it's just this amazing network of veterans. And we are one of the oldest fraternities, well, the oldest fraternity in the United States, and the most steadfast one as well. So we're all very well connected with each other. And the wonderful thing is we may not have ever met, but we will open our door to each and every other veteran we have encountered. So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it seems like it's a solid group. You know, when it comes to, you know, being, you know, I mean, you establish that camaraderie during service, you know, and so I'm sure that's something, you know, that carries on after, you know, after you're out of the service as well.
Yeah.
Now, so when you take the photographs in of service, you basically open it up to all of the services, correct?
Yes. Yep. Every branch and every generation.
Okay, great. And now, and for those of you who are listening, I would really suggest that you go on and look at the galleries that Stacy has. They're just amazing photographs. You do it in black and white. Any reason why that you chose that? I mean, it's great. I mean, they're you know, I love the pictures. You know, but I'm just curious, you know, from one photographer to another, you know, why did you choose black and white?
Well, I wanted to do black and white for a number of reasons, actually. First and foremost, I wanted to make sure that it was timeless, and I feel like black and white will always be, you won't look at it and say, oh, that's definitely from the 60s.
I see.
Mm-hmm. You know, 20, 30 years from now, it will still be timeless. Second, I didn't want the color to distract away from the individual, because that's the most important part of the image, is their expression and their personality. And sometimes I feel like color can draw the viewer away from those details that are so important.
Yeah. And I can understand that too, because when you look at the photographs, you know, the expressions are, I mean, just tell worlds about, you know, about the people. Now, when you do a photo shoot with the veteran, how do you establish? I mean, because some of them, you look at them, some of them are smiling, some of them are serious, you know, and that's like I mentioned in the beginning, you know, some are look at a distance with a gaze. So how do you establish, you know, with a veteran, what kind of look the portrait is going to portray?
Well, I don't coerce, and I don't I don't push them into anything they don't want to. So essentially what happens is I will put them in a chair, or I will put them in a position, and I will begin to talk to them, and I will let them relax and just kick back. And most of these moments are candid moments, and they are genuine expression, or you know, parts like I have a picture of Dana, and she's smiling, and that's when she was talking about her military career. And you know, I have a picture, oh my goodness, a gentleman by the name of Steve Thoreau, and his eyes are sort of averted away, looking off camera. That's part of his personality. He doesn't necessarily want to make eye contact. He's a bit shy. He's a little bit more recluse, but that's him. So I wanted to make sure that each and every veteran is captured in a true and genuine fashion of who they are.
Yeah. Well, you know, I noticed there was even one veteran who was looking down. I mean, you can't even see his face, you know. And I thought, I mean, that to me, that was, I mean, that just said a lot. You know, to me, it just portrayed, you know, separateness, loneliness, you know, detachment. I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, just from looking at that image, that's kind of what it portrayed to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah, I have I have a picture of Nathan Lawson. He's got tattoos on his stomach, and he's holding up his shirt and looking down. And so I think his is that he'd rather have people read his story on his body versus him having to tell them, you know. Or like Joe Valdespino, he's we were talking about his time during World War II, and he was thinking about his friends, and that's a moment where he was trying to, you know, as most men do, hide his tears and just kind of wipe them away. And, you know, all these little moments. So that's what's so good about the project.
It is. You know, I mean, those are the things that really capture the essence. I mean, that's what really photography is about, is trying to capture the essence of, you know, that spirit within, you know, within each of them. Now, what are your goals? I mean, you obviously, you've got, you know, more than 3,000 photographs. So, I mean, are you just, do you, how many do you do a year? Or is there just, you just kind of go by the seat of your pants, you know, and they kind of set it up however, you know, spirit drives you?
Well, you know, it really comes down to how much I can physically handle, because it is quite an undertaking between hauling. I have 6 cases of luggage, an assistant, and, you know, traveling, and, of course, all these other things. So it comes down to the support I can get, the time, and the time I have that I can fit everything in, my physical well-being, of course, and, you know, the support I can find. So, usually people call me and say, hey, can you come out to Poplar Bluff, Missouri? And I'm like, okay, well, let me put together a package and let you know what that would entail. Because that does, you know, it costs money to get out to Poplar Bluff.
Oh, yeah.
How long am I going to be there? How are we going to get the veterans? And anyway, coming up with strategies. So it's not as whimsical as like one day waking up and saying, hey, I'm going to go to Chicago. So, you know, that all dictates how many I can handle. You know, last year, I haven't even added it up, but I know that I went to, I think, about 24 cities last year.
Wow.
So.
Now, if somebody wanted to coordinate an appearance for you in their town, they just basically contact you and you kind of send out information on what it entails and go from there?
Yeah. Yeah, and what I find is, you know, sometimes they can rally together and, you know, find a sponsor that's a regional sponsor, or, you know, maybe the American Legion donates their space so we don't have to rent a space, or the VFW, for instance, or any other public community place. You know, there's ways of making it happen. Yes, that's usually the best way.
Well, that's good. Now, I also notice on your website there's ways for people to purchase photos or to log in and download. What's that all about? I mean, because some of them are just, you know, amazing photos that I think, you know, would just be so telling that people would want to share.
Yeah. Well, so after every photo shoot for the veterans, I use Photo Shelter because it allows me to give each and every veteran download permissions so they can download the high-resolution digital file, and then they can share it with their family and friends and do whatever they want with it. So that's my gift to them. And some of the veterans were like, well, where do I go get it printed? And I said, well, you can go get it printed anywhere. And some of the folks were a little computer illiterate. So they're like, just make it easy and give us a print service. So I just attached one on there so that they could order one. It's definitely not an obligation for them. It's just something of more convenience than necessity.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Yeah, because, you know, some of them, I'm sure, you know, would love to be able to pass them down and share them with their family. Now, one of the things I also noticed on your website, too, is that you are a speaker, and that you can go
yep.
to groups and do that. So I want to talk just a little bit about that, because, you know, that's one of the things for people who are out there who, you know, as a photographer, I'm sure you have got a presentation that will just keep people's attention. But can you talk about maybe some of the topics that you have spoken on and the types of organizations to whom you have spoken?
Absolutely. Sure. I speak to a wide range of topics, anywhere from being a professional photographer, obviously, and then I talk about women's rights, especially mm-hmm. women in the working professional. I also talk about being a small business owner, and of course, one of the bigger topics is talking about resiliency. And so, as I mentioned before, I was a military photographer for 12 years, and all of a sudden that was taken away from me, and I felt like I had nothing more to live for. And so it's being able to identify your strengths and to be resilient enough to recognize a new path and to take advantage of that. So I speak a lot to being who you are, finding the strengths within yourself, and finding the motivation to keep moving forward. So definitely motivating, getting people motivated.
Yeah, that's great. You know, that's great, because, you know, like you said, your experience, you know, coming from, you know, your personal experience, having your career kind of taken away from you, and then having to come back from that and then find a new purpose, and one that, you know, is very fulfilling, is, I mean, so many people are going through changes right now that, you know, to be able to see what you have done and hear what it is that you have done to be able to make that shift can be very encouraging. One of the things I noticed is that you also spoke to the Veterans Administration personnel, and there's a couple of things mm-hmm. that you spoke to them about that I would like to get information from you on a couple of the topics, because even though some of the listeners may not be VA personnel, many people out there are caregivers for veterans, you know, in the family. So
yeah.
One of the things that you talked to them about was, you know, the special needs of combat veterans, the mental and physical. What are some of the, you know, for people who are combat veterans, what are some of the, that's unique in being able to, you know, provide, you know, that particular caregiving for those individuals?
Well, I think every day it offers a new challenge, and every day you can bring yourself to new successes. And because some veterans are, you know, they wear their injuries outwardly, and so it's much more apparent. And by that mm-hmm. I mean amputees or those who are wheelchair bound. But the majority of veterans don't wear those deep scars
right.
Outwardly. They wear them deep within. And for caregivers, that is something that they live with on a daily basis. And sometimes it's like sleeping next to a powder keg and always being a little bit on edge. And
mm-hmm.
that can be stressful in itself, the unknown and the unexpected. And so I talk a lot about patience and always making time for yourself and your own well-being, and different ways to connect with veterans in a thoughtful and healing and a mutually beneficial way. So,
yeah.
And I've spoke to this. I've spoke at middle schools, high schools, universities, colleges. I've spoke to conventions. I've spoke to the National Olympic Committee and the White House, and a number of other non-governmental organizations as well, and obviously governmental organizations like the VA and Reserve Officers Association, the Veterans of Foreign War, American Legion, all those sort of veteran-specific. So, but I think I find it very beneficial for those who may not be involved with veterans organizations, because it gives insight into what we are facing on a daily basis and how best to incorporate veterans into one's social circle or work environment, or how to just interact with veterans when coming face to face with one.
Yeah. So, you know, and you talked about in circles. So is inclusion into, you know, daily activities, I mean, is that a like a very important factor? Because the reason I ask is, you know, again, when I go back to that picture of that gentleman, you know, kind of looking down, and you talked about the other one who kind of looked off to the side and that eye contact, to me that's, you know, indicative of kind of being separate and remaining outside the circle. You know, so is inclusion into life really one of the important things that you really want to give good attention to?
It most absolutely is. Inclusion is so very important, and inclusion without feeling like they're being coddled in many ways. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean just inclusion as a human being, not be really careful around Spencer because, you know, because of this or because of that, or, you know, just saying, hey, come on and join us and, you know, just see how things pan out and not always feel like you have to walk on eggshells. Because I think that tension, when brought into a social sphere or a social circle, that tension alone is palpable, and that already is exclusionary.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, and you know, now you mentioned, you know, that powder keg kind of possibility, and you know, if many of the experiences are kept inside and you know, left to fester, how does someone, like if a family member, you know, if your spouse or parent, you know, is exhibiting, you know, that kind of, you know, disposition. Yeah, how does one deal with that?
Well, I believe it's really important to address the heart of the issue, and by that it's the unresolved memories, or you know, maybe not properly attending to that history. And by that, it can be through family members or talking with family members or finding a community to help be more inclusionary, and or, you know, just plain old therapy. And there are so many therapies out there through the VA system, also the Vet Center, as well as church groups or religious institutions. And for those who maybe aren't religious, there is what I find very therapeutic for me is, you know, just meditation and finding a nice quiet place to just kind of bring myself back down to earth and say, hey, I'm not in combat. I'm back here at home. Everything's safe. Everything's sound. And just reminding myself where I am and who I am and what time it is and what day it is. And just kind of learning how to bring myself back to reality. But these aren't things that come overnight. It needs to be encouraged to, for the veterans to do and to take hold, and also those who are around them to embrace that and to know and identify when all the individuals need to just take a moment and to bring themselves back to reality and back to the now and be in the now. And be okay to be present.
Yeah, yeah. That very, very good. Those are great suggestions. Gosh, well, we're down to the last few minutes. Our 45 minutes has just flown by. How can if a listener is out there, how can they help you with either the Veterans Portrait Project or even in speaking engagements or anyway, how can they help you?
Well, hey, veteransportraitproject.com has so much information about how to reach me. If you want to learn more about the project, we've got the veteransportraitproject.com, and we've got a blog as well where we feature a new veteran every week and tell a little bit more about them. Our Facebook page stays up to date with where we're going, where we've been, what we're doing, and you can chime in and also reach me through either the blog, the website, or the Facebook page. And if you want to maybe perhaps donate to the Veterans Portrait Project, and you could do that in somebody's honor for Christmas or Hanukkah or just for the holiday season, you can do that through the veteransportraitproject.com as well. There's a link there where you can donate.
Great, great. Perfect, and I hope everyone listening will follow through with that. Well, now, just one last question. Now that you're outside of the veterans' portraits, what else do you take pictures of? What is your passion right now in your retirement, so to speak?
Well, I'm still a journalist at heart. So I spent a couple of trips to the Republic of Georgia this year to document a story about displaced persons. From the sort of south of Sesha region with a conflict between the Republic of Georgia and Russia. So I'm kind of spending some time looking at exploring that. And, you know, my focus has always been, since being a war photographer, my focus has been what happens to human beings involved in conflict and all the peripheral sort of things that take place during and after war. So that's kind of where I focus my efforts photographically.
Great. Well, Stacey, this has really been a treat, and I really want to thank you for spending your time and also for your project. It's a very worthy cause, and like I say, I can just stare at those pictures that in your galleries and just imagine the stories behind the faces. They're just it's an excellent job. You really captured the essence of the individual.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thanks so much for having me on to be able to share their stories and my story. And, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Stacey L. Pearsall. She is the creator of the Veterans Portrait Project. Again, you can find out more by visiting theveteransportraitproject.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. And again, on that page is a link for you to be able to donate, and you can do so in the honor of the veteran in your life. Also, again, like Stacey said, there is the VPP blog where they highlight the stories, and just go in and read some of them. You'll really enjoy them. And again, also join her on Facebook and follow their activities, and be sure to invite her to your city. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.